Mine's on too. Hey everyone, I think we'll get started. Thanks for coming today. I'm grabbing the clicker. My name is Todd Landstad. I'm a program manager within Windows, and I have what I think is a pretty awesome job. I get to work with you guys, folks like you, who are building great Windows apps, and work through the whole process from conception to getting those apps in the store. I focus primarily on media-oriented apps, and so we're going to bring a lot of the experiences that we've had over this last year of building those apps to you today. It's going to include some design experience, as well as some developer tips and tricks, and hopefully it's a lot of stuff that you can learn from and integrate into your apps. I'm here with Laura Heine.
Hi, I'm Laura Heine. I also work on the Windows team. I focus on the user experience across all the store categories. I'm working with partners in order to help get them ready from a UX and UI standpoint. Additionally, I spend a bit of extra time on the media and entertainment apps, and so as Todd mentioned, we'll bring some of the things that we've learned over the last little bit to you, and so you can do that also.
Yeah, I'm excited to go through all this stuff. It's been a really fun experience. As you know, the Windows 8 just launching recently. You guys getting in the audience here, locally getting your new devices and being able to play with them, so we want to show you some of the aspects there, and demo a number of apps. Part of the big thing with our experiences today, consuming media, whether it's music, video, communication scenarios, we all know how important it is. You guys are traveling, you're talking with probably your friends and family back home, maybe over Skype, you're listening to your music, you're watching your videos. Just a core piece of what we do today with the computing experiences, and Windows 8 really brings those to life. In past lives, I would have been really focused in a session like this, I'd be really focused on just hardcore media playback, audio playback, and those, of course, are a very, very key part of this. But I think it's really interesting how media today is part of all of our experiences. Whether it's watching news clips, whether I'm shopping online for a new camera or a new electronic device, which is probably what I usually end up looking at, and I'm watching videos about product reviews. Whether I'm playing games that are really just immersive in that full video content. Each one of these news clips, by the way, I missed the first one. Each one of these scenarios are really a part of what you do every day, and probably what you've been doing with your Windows 8 PC since you've gotten them, being able to consume that media. And so what we're focusing on today is those experiences, those great media experiences, and building them into rich applications that showcase that media, among other things. So just the point there is you don't have to be focused only on video or audio distribution. Of course, that's great. But any application, we're hoping to give you a lot of good tips around design and development for those. So one of the first things that you end up seeing, and by the way, the agenda slide here, we're gonna pack in a lot of good things and a bunch of demos. We're likely going to cover most of this session up front, and then we're going to leave some time at the end of the session. We'll use the session microphones here to take the questions from you folks at the end of the session. We'd appreciate any questions that you have. So to get started, the first thing that you end up seeing with the app, any app that you install on your Win8 PC, is that tile experience. So I'm going to have Laura walk through one of those, or this beginning of those experiences.
So tiles are the first thing that a user will see about your app. Is it on the start screen? And as you can see, there are many that are installed here. The user can add their favorites, and in this area we have some pinned secondary tiles in order to show. But in this front area, we have a set of apps, that some of them which we'll demo today. But you'll see some unique things around each of these tiles. FX, for example, has a small logo in place in the bottom left corner so that the user can always tell as the American Horror Story or whichever program that they have is rotating through is still present from a brand standpoint. And the user can immediately identify that this is theirs. Likewise, Slacker does the same thing in the bottom left corner, and you can see a little bit of information, again, about their brand and about the type of content that they're doing. All of these tiles are live with activity and providing information specific about their app and the content that the app is delivering to the user, and updating at a pace that is being very relevant and fresh to the user.
And I think one of the things that you've probably seen a lot with our other sessions where we talk about tiles, Laura has spoken in her sessions of the available templates and how you can customize this. But I think the key thing here for media delivery is that fresh content, making sure that the user knows, you know, currently what they're watching, potentially if it's a video app, or what they're listening to, but as well as upcoming things. So we may have content that's being distributed on through your app, new TV shows, new music, new content that's coming down. Be able to notify them through that tile, definitely important.
So as Todd mentioned, there are several tile templates that are available to you. We have 45, some are wide and some are square. And square is a smaller size here. As you can tell by the video and the music, what these apps have chosen to do is include their brand name within the short name of the manifest. And so it's always appearing within the area. And that's just a little bit different. It's another option that's available to you compared with using the small logo. Mm-hmm.
One of the things also I wanted to call out, I'm going to do a little trick here, I'll switch places with Laura, is I'm just going to trigger a notification to occur on screen, because with media, within any app, you don't have to be within a specific application to be able to have a push notification triggered to that user. So this is the case where, say, the user has installed your app, you have new content, new fresh content that's appeared on your as part of your service, you could push that down. Maybe, and again, the example is a TV show that's about to air, say if it were on a TV network, and you saw that toast notification pop up. It's a light dismiss. If I tap on that notification, I can dive straight into the app, so I can have a deep link right into the application with that notification. And that can be pushed from the server side, either generated by client side or pushed down to the app from server side. So it's a great way to reach your customers, reach those people that are interested in the content that you're delivering inside that app.
So next we're going to go ahead and open one of the apps. We'll just open a couple of our favorite ones. I'll start with Hulu Plus. You'll see across these apps that they're uniquely differentiated and bringing things that are rich about their own content libraries to the user. For example, this has a very large hero image that is immediately available when the user opens the app, with some specific information about this happens to be a New Girl episode from last night. And then as the user continues to pan horizontally with the page, they're continuing to see very rich content about the shows that are available. And there's also another unique point that we want to bring out, which is that there are different size tiles on the page. So we had the large hero image, and now we're moving to some that are feature areas, and then there's some different size tiles further along the line. Additionally, Hulu is helping to guide the user through their content with changes in their typography. And so they're using some, within their type ramp, they have some visual variation within their font sizes, and that's helping to give the user information about the different type of content that's available.
One of the points I wanted to make on this screen, it's something that's been echoed in other sessions as well, is Windows is pretty unique because you can run your application. Windows runs on a variety of screen resolutions. So being able to have your content scale from a small screen, small monitor, up to those very large, high DPI monitors, something that you really want to pay attention to. And what we see in a number of cases is the ability for applications, what they do is make a choice. They can add more tiles. You see this in the start screen, actually, where they add additional rows of content. You kind of have two choices, either scale your content or add additional ones. And when we're looking at poster art for media, one of the more appropriate things is to add an additional row to the height of that canvas so that you can accommodate a larger display.
Oh, that's a great point. So now we have the Netflix app that's up on the screen for you to see. And again, they've handled things in a different way, that it's unique to their brand. And again, they're doing some of the similar patterns that we have with the silhouette that's common across all of the apps in terms of helping the user navigate through the text as well as through the content delivery itself. Each one of these items goes to an individual detail level of a video and can provide additional content within. So it goes down to a section level if we tap on the section header. Otherwise, it goes into, in Netflix's case, directly into a video play. And you can handle those types of options from a navigation standpoint, whichever fits best from your user standpoint. But again, here's the section level, and it provides a nice list of what's available in Todd's Instant Queue. And then another navigation piece that Netflix offers the user is a unique way of jumping between sections. And they have a number of them. They've designed a very nice semantic zoom page so the user can just pinch in and then be able to see all of the different genres that are available within their catalog and go ahead and jump within a particular area and continue to then go in and find the particular item that they wanted.
And one of the reasons we chose this app to show, first, it's great to show real-world experiences, apps that you can download and try. In this case, the semantic zoom is a stylized version that Netflix has chosen to use with the smaller thumbs and categorizing into each of the areas. But it's one of those areas that we have, you know, examples of some apps that perform this. But the general guidance is to have that flexibility to use the branding in the ways that you expect or want to do with your app. And this is just a great example of how semantic zoom doesn't have to be limited to individual tiles or the way that the start screen performs it. You can have your own styling as well. So we'll flip back to the slide.
Yep.
Let's go ahead and number one. And so Laura just went through a number of items here. Visual variation, having that hero image. You can see in this this guidance. And by the way, this guidance is on our design.windows.com. A lot of the images that we're using in this slide and a couple of other ones come from our guidance there, created by Vertigo, who's also at the conference. But what we see here is that visual variation. You know, if you've got hundreds and hundreds of square tiles that are kind of mesmerizing, and if you've seen some apps that just really don't have that differentiation between the sizing. Your eye doesn't have anywhere to be drawn to specifically. As Laura had mentioned, you know, using a hero image lets you showcase some of that content, get your user kind of more interested, and have their eye drawn to the correct spots. So that was the media demo that we performed. And we'll go into the video playback portion.
I think you want to talk a little bit about performance first.
Thank you. One of the pieces, I'm actually going to bring up performance a handful of times in different ways. There's another session here at the conference. Kiran Kumar is talking about looking at performance considerations. But for content libraries, if you've got a lot of items, so we saw with Netflix or Hulu or any of the other apps that we'll be showing, you've got a lot of content. One of the biggest, actually two tips that I have that we've seen with many of the apps is first virtualizing the content that you're rendering. So using UI element virtualization allows you to render, and the system to render only the items that are visible on screen. If you don't use virtualization, the system's going to attempt to render all of the items that you're loading into a wrap panel or a grid view or list view. And so what you can do is use some of the controls that we have, like a virtualized wrap panel, that will perform that UI element virtualization for you. The second tip that I have is something called overdraw. So the ability for you to have maybe multiple layers. So in this case, a background image. Maybe there's a translucency. Maybe there's some borders around these items. And then you've got the poster art, the thumbnails. Each one of those layers that you're choosing to draw is going to take a tax or have a tax on the CPU and GPU for the rendering of those items, take extra battery life, potentially degrade the user interaction. So just be aware of overdraw. Make sure that you're being considerate of the items that are being drawn, and especially if they're being overlapped, because that GPU is still going to be drawing those items even if they're not visible. So this is the thank you for the reminder of the performance considerations. We're going to come back to performance in a little bit around video playback as well. Go for it. Bring up Netflix. I think we were watching an earlier movie here.
So we'll go ahead and bring up Transformers.
Oh, and let's go ahead and switch.
Sorry about that. So let me go ahead and stop that and bring it back again so you can see the experience. When the user taps on the individual detail level, then the movie comes up so that the user can watch that, and there is a slight overlay that includes the scrubber and some of the other commands that are available to them, as well as some navigation information. And then they've customized this heavily.
This is something that we want a consistent user experience between the video playback apps, but kind of similar to the branding point, we want you to customize these and make them your own. So this is in this case they've done that.
And then the user has an affordance in order to continue to press the back button to move again back to the location where they initially started. On other apps, so I'll go ahead and do that again. I'm moving my finger up to the back button that's in the top app bar. And then I've returned to the hub page.
One of the things that I want to mention about full screen video playback is another performance optimization that you can make. We have some MSDN documentation on it, but if you play back your video full screen, and again, we're focusing a little bit on just full out video playback, but this goes for news clips, this goes for training videos, any kind of apps that you're using. The ability to offload the video playback onto the GPU is something that Windows provides for you. All you have to do is make sure that your video, say in this case, is playing full screen. It's a simple API of window.current.bounds that gives you the size of the display. As long as you're sizing your media element or your video tag to full screen, what Windows does is offload rendering of this video off to the GPU. Customer impact is much longer life in your battery. You're going to be able to use your Surface device or any other Windows PC much longer than you normally would. The second piece that we're seeing with a number of apps, and especially with short-form content, because they may not be thinking too much about this rich media experience, is, say, watching a news clip that's more than 2 or 3 minutes long. You might have noticed on the PCs that you get, they get configured to turn their display off after about 2 minutes. If you're watching a video that's longer than 2 minutes, what you might find is a video app who's not performing the correct tasks continue to play while the display turns itself off. Not a great customer experience. All you have to do is called a single API, which is display_request.requestActive. It basically tells the operating system that you'd like to keep that display on while you're playing that video. You can release that activity at the end of the video so that you can be conservative on that power, so you don't keep the display on constantly. But display request.requestActive is a really handy and easy API to keep that screen on so that you can continue playing great video. This, by the way, is a 720p video that I shot off of helmet-mounted camera. The point I have it here is just a reminder that hardware acceleration for video playback is built into the system. So Windows provides that for you, so you get that frame, those great frames, no drop frames in this video. And then if I was using more elaborate audio, which I probably wasn't here, Dolby Digital Plus is available to your Windows 8 apps just by default. It's natively supported within Windows. So those are two aspects, both on the video side and performance, and then on the audio richness side that are provided to you from the OS. So those cover the full screen playback, customized controls, and then a few tips on playback performance. I mentioned and that was the video that was a demo we did. I mentioned some of the online resources. This is just some examples of what we've got online. I think on this one, maybe I'll just call out the playlist support that's in the upper right. And later on today, we have a session around the player framework, which is a framework that helps you build advanced media playback apps for Windows. And it includes styling scaling. It includes playlist support, ad support, a number of issues. I'll touch back on at the end of the session as well for that. And again, some of these are just visuals to provide you for reference. Last, I think we're going to go take a look at SnapView. SnapView is something that we often get questions about. Do I have to? So first, it's a certification rule. You do have to support SnapView because it's a core part of the Windows experience. And the display just darkened. So we'll go ahead and we're on number 4. There we go. Yep.
Thanks.
It's a core part of a Windows experience, and having SnapView supported, whether you're reading articles, whether you're playing video, whether you're just interacting with that app, that's a core piece. And each one of these apps, you see some great SnapView experiences. They maintain context, so whatever I'm doing, I still expect to be doing that same task when the application is snapped. I wanted to bring up a unique case with video that we're seeing, I'm getting some good customer feedback on, which is that case here. Laura has the videos app snapped. It's giving me an interesting point of view on the side here. I've got the video. I might have some description about that video. I still have the transport controls that are provided from that app visible and available to me. But if we go ahead, I'm going to go ahead and bring up the keyboard. One of the things about SnapView is the ability to multitask. And if I'm multitasking, and I don't know about you guys, but if I'm watching movies, I might be doing other stuff at the same time. I might be searching the internet, might be playing around writing Word documents, maybe even doing work. If I bring up the soft keyboard, especially on a tablet form factor, and I'm wandering around, I'm roaming, I'm using that on-screen keyboard to interact with my apps. So simple guidance here is, if you push the video content up to the upper left, you always have a great experience. With the keyboard off, I get that additional information or area to put the information about the video. And with the soft keyboard available or visible, I don't have any occlusion. The keyboard is separate from that video frame. I can still continue, because I watch it all day long, I continue watching my skiing video and having that great experience.
So if you can bring the CW app back up for just a moment.
Just go ahead and do that. And I'll switch.
An additional piece that we want to point out is that there's ability to play an app or a video inline as well as full screen. And so one thing that the CW has done in this case is they have an affordance for the user playing in the, a video in a small screen, but then also have additional information over to its side. And this is useful in cases where there's a lot of different episodes, some seasonality situations, things along those lines, and releases that you want to make sure that the user is paying attention to at a detail page level.
And news articles as well. Being able to read those articles,
definitely.
Watch that video at the same time, seeing how the storm is doing on the East Coast, for example, get to read about it and see what's happening.
And so when you do this, the Oprah Winfrey app also does the same thing. And let's see, we'll go ahead and get it to play. Notice also that there's still a way for the user in order to go full screen and then return again to the inline video. And this is really important, so the user is able to balance the size of what's showing to the task that they're happening to be doing at the time. Mm-hmm. And along those same lines, there's another point that Todd was making, and it's worth repeating a couple different times. As I move this app into SnapView, the user isn't getting pulled out of the experience of watching that video. They're still able to watch the video. It's not changing timing or location or anything along those lines or resetting or pulling them into another type of reading experience. They're still able to access the video and continue watching it.
Cool. Okay, so we're going to move into some audio areas. So one of the things, audio is prevalent, whether it's watching videos or just listening to audio clips, books on tape, music, streaming, or local. We've had a number of pieces of guidance and developer, both design and developer tips for this area. four major areas that I'm listing here. I'm going to go through a couple of demos. One of the things about these is I look at the ordering of sharing this with you guys. We've spent so much time with the existing applications to make sure we have great experiences. It's fun to show them off, but it's one of those things where a picture's worth a thousand words. So I'm going to go ahead and just jump into a couple of scenarios. I'm going to show you some positives, some challenges that you may think you face, and then some examples of how to solve those. So let me go ahead and go back to the demo box. Oh, thank you. Are we all good? Okay, thank you. So let's go ahead and all right. So we'll make sure that we're all set. So one of the things I'm going to show first are transport controls. So transport controls are something that the OS provides as a means to control audio playback and sound level through a common, consistent control. This control can be seen when I increase the volume. I'm just hitting the hardware volume button on this device. And you can see an on-screen control. That control is going to show up anywhere. That's the most simple form of the transport controls that we support. There are cases where we may be listening to music, and we are able to use those hardware controls to interact with the volume levels. There are also a little bit more advanced cases, something like Slacker here, who has taken advantage. I'm going to go ahead and run the Stormy Weather channel or station here. Taken advantage first of on-screen, I'm going to pause it for a moment, Canvas controls to control playback, so to be able to advance the station to another song, to control play and pause, do any other customized controls. But they are a little bit more advanced, and any audio app, this guidance goes to you if you're looking at playing back audio, they are taking advantage of that simple transport control, but adding a little bit more data to it. Through a media control object, they're able to set a number of things. They can set the title of this track. They can set the artist, 127 characters or less. They can also set a thumbnail to the music. This might be poster art for a video. This might be station information if it's a live radio station. And then the next thing, you can see that the next and previous buttons, previous is disabled right now. So through media control, they also get the ability to set that value and control whether it's active or not. So you have that flexibility. And this is going to work whether I lock the system or whether I am in any other application. So as we interact with our PC and we're listening to the background music, Stormy Sky by the Kinks in this case, I'm able to have that great experience and still control what I am interacting with. As a part of that transport control, what I see in a lot of the short clip video apps, which I'm interested in sharing some good guidance about, is the fact that hardware controls, whether it's a play pause button on your keyboard, whether it's a handheld remote, or even on, say, the new Surface devices, the keyboard actually has play pause built into it. So supporting hardware events is something that we'd encourage all apps who are playing back media to do. So that if I'm watching that news clip and I take a call from a friend, I'm able to use a hardware device to hit play pause and have that interact. And that's something that is very straightforward to use just by simply using the media control object and capturing the events. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. When I'm playing background audio, I get a lot of questions of what happens with the interaction with other apps. So I wanted to show you a couple of cases and a simple developer tip to set the right thing for your application. So I'm going to go ahead and let Stormy Weather continue to play. And I'm going to bring up just Internet Explorer. I'm going to bring up a YouTube video. And this is just... hopefully it's a good video that I search on. Search results. I don't know if I have Steve Ballmer on here somewhere. I actually don't. I'm going to go ahead and do one of my favorite ones, the Surface video. So this is kind of, I'm using Internet Explorer to illustrate this, but I currently have background audio playing, and I'm listening to that music, and now I want to show you what happens if another application I choose to launch has some kind of media in it, some kind of audio. You know, what will happen, and what can we do to make it a better experience? So I'm going to turn the kinks up a little bit here, a little louder, and then I'm going to go ahead and play some, I think it's some, the dubstep music. And oddly, it's pretty quiet. So what we do get is a clash. We get both the foreground app attempting to play, it's a little quiet in the background. We get the foreground app attempting to play its audio track while Slacker in the background is rocking out to the music. And that might be intended, but if it's an unintended case, you know, that's not something that we really have a great customer experience with. And so to solve this, you really only have to do one thing with your app. There is something called an MS Audio category. You can set foreground only media as your MS Audio category in your app. And what that does is every time your app comes to the foreground, no matter what else is happening, it will cause that music or sound to be paused. Let me show you that scenario. So we're still rocking out to the music, and now I'm going to bring up something like Netflix, and we're going to go back into Transformers. And so as soon as the video playback begins, what Netflix is doing one single thing. It sets foreground audio, foreground only media to the audio track that's being played. As soon as it does that, it lets Windows know that this is foreground only, and Windows will take care of the rest. It will pause the background audio and mute that audio, so you have that great experience. It's not something you have to do. Some apps, say if I'm watching a sports event, if I'm watching, say, the Seahawks, and since I'm from Seattle, and I put that to the background, and I'm still want to listen to the audio track while that video is playing in the background, and I'm, say, playing a game, I might want that mix happening. So that's something that a user can take a little bit of advantage of, but in the most case, or in the best case for the developer, all you have to do is set your foreground, your MS Audio category to foreground only media. Next question I usually get is, what happens if I snap Netflix and I play music? And in this case, what will happen is both apps will play their audio. So you do get that experience, but the user in this case is always in control, and they've chosen to run both of those apps. In those cases, what you're going to find is some apps are going to choose to do an in-app volume control to let you, the user, control the levels of those volumes so that you can still have a great experience. But of course, I've always got the transport controls to interact with, pause that music, continue watching that great film that I'm taking advantage of. When Netflix gets pushed to the back, there is one other event that I wanted to pay attention to, and that's called the sound level event. It simply tells you whether you should be playing your audio or pausing it. And an Algos API here are the visual states that you probably use with other apps. Currently, you're probably suspending and resuming your apps based on the events that you receive from the operating system. But for audio, you don't want to depend only on visual states or the visibility of your app because of the cases with background audio and playing that content. So there is a simple set of events that we've got that are provided to your application that let you either mute or play the audio. Let me go ahead and walk you through what that means for the developer. So we looked at the scenarios where we're playing simple audio, played background audio, which took advantage of the transport controls, and then I showed you how to use foreground audio to make sure that your app takes control of that audio and mutes any other bits behind the scenes, any background audio. The transport controls, I put a few images up just to show that simple case, the more elaborate case that we saw with this Slacker Radio app, and then a couple of cases in between. You don't have to set all of the metadata if you don't have it. This could be a live radio stream, for example, where you're just broadcasting maybe the station identifier or basic information. And this is probably the biggest eye chart or the most words I have on any slide, so it's not too bad of a slide deck. This is a listing of the MS Audio category. I really wanted to make sure that you guys got these points. Essentially, look at this list, pick the one, right one for you. Pick foreground audio, foreground only media, if you're someone who's playing an immersive experience that's always foreground like that video case. But for a background audio case, something like Slacker, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, background capable media is something that you should set. I've actually highlighted in green the two items that will still continue to play audio while in the background. The third one on the list is the communication scenario. That's kind of the Skype scenario. That one's a little bit more advanced, but it basically has the ability to both play in the background and set some real-time low latency audio settings for the platform. But that is, since it's a lesser case, I'm not going to focus on that one. It's mostly the foreground and background cases. There are alerts, and there are also sound effects, game effects, and game media, which is the soundtrack for your game. So for the hardcore gamer developers out there who might be thinking, hey, this guy's only talking JavaScript or .NET, I just want to make sure to mention that this category setting is available to C++ as well. So it's throughout the platform. And it's really about that control piece. Even for a game, you can control that experience. Do you want to allow background audio playing while your user is you know, playing Jetpack Joyride, one of my favorites? Or do you want to prevent that, you want that audio to pause in the background so that they can listen to the rich audio track that you've added into your game? And all you've got to do is really set your audio streams based on this correct category. Windows takes care of the rest. And then you have that better together story now that I was mentioning. You don't know what other apps are running at the time, but you do know what to set correctly for your app so that when it does come time that the user is running multiple apps at the same time, they play well together, that the correct music levels are being shown. And speaking of sound levels, going from most amount of words to almost the fewest, this is an event that is provided to you by the operating system to give you an indication of what you should do with audio playback. Really, the only ones you need to really pay attention to are the first two. Should I be playing back content? That's the full sound level notification. This is an event that gets fired to your app. This is when your app gets launched or whether it comes to the foreground. Simply start playing the audio. You could ignore it as well if you wanted. The second one is muted. If you get pushed to the background and you're not a background app, background audio app as it is, you actually don't even need to do anything with this. But if you're a background audio app, you'll receive this event to let you know that you should be muting your audio. And what you do in response to that is just to pause your audio track. Then when you come back to full foreground again, you get that full event. Third is low. That's actually only communication events. That allows an application to attenuate the audio, to bring it down to a lower level that while maybe we're taking a phone call or interacting in some way with a communications app. That's something that's not used as frequently. So the two takeaways here are take a look at this and focus on the full and muted events. So I wanted to mention the background audio case. Before I cough, I'm going to have some water. And you know, we've got a lot of documentation out there for developers. I don't know about you guys. Actually, I didn't ask at the beginning. I'm just going to take advantage since I'm going to take a drink. So developers in the audience who are building Windows Store apps today, maybe show of hands, you guys in process or have apps that you've already created. So number of people. I spent a lot of time on MSDN and running the SDK samples that we have at dev.windows.com and you know, reading through that documentation. We've got a lot of it. The challenge is we've got a lot of it, and sometimes you know finding the right thing for you can be challenging. So what we've done here with the items that I've just presented, as well as this one, is try to summarize the things that you need to know to take away if you're building one of these apps or taking advantage of one of the features. With background audio, there's four things you need to do. Starts with Visual Studio, add a background task that is marked as audio. So that's number one, pretty easy, hit F5 and go. Number two is take advantage of the MS Audio category that I just did my informational about. Set the right audio category. In this case, set it to background capable media. So that's number two. And then number three is actually three and four are part of the same thing, but I showed you right at the very beginning. Use the transport controls that the media control object provides you. and this one is a little bit more subtle, not everyone gets it, is you do need to register for and respond to the hardware events that are coming from a device, say such as this, for play, for pause, those discrete events, as well as the combined play pause. You need to respond to those in order to make it your, if you're making your way from that app on your dev box into the store, you need to follow this recipe to get to that. There's a bit of an advanced case, and I actually have a prop. I mentioned battery optimization for GPUs, for video playback, extra long battery life, if I take advantage of those. For audio, there's one other thing that we've added to the system that I think is really cool. So I've got a Surface device here. If I am, you know, listening to music, screens on, and you know, I'm taking advantage of the rich features of Windows 8, but I go ahead and I'm turning the power off. Just hit the power button, turn it off. Screen's off, machine goes into a low power state. If the music that I'm currently listening to, I want the music that I'm currently listening to continue to play. Presumably with a low power state, I'm gonna get lots of battery life. I'll have all day battery for listening to that music. For apps that are background audio capable, in order for this functionality to work, need to do one thing. That one thing is really, so I've got two up there, but first one is kind of self-explanatory. Do what we did on the last slide, make sure you have a background audio app, so that's kind of a given. But ensure your network assets can be accessed. So if you're pointing to MP3 files, say that are up on a server somewhere, and you're really just pointing your audio tag or media element to that web location, what'll happen is in connected standby, the case where the machine is in a low power state, that one song will play, and then when you set your source location to that network address for the next song, no music will play, it'll just stop. And that's because for performance and battery optimization, we turn the net tap off. We turn it off except for a couple of scenarios. Using background transfer API, it's a pretty cool API that really lets you upload or download files even when your app is not running. I encourage you to check out the documentation there, it's a cool API. If you're using background transfer API, instead of pointing to the web location for that audio source, and this is especially true for any app, not just the music apps, but using background transfer API to fetch that audio track, bring it down to the system, and then play from that local resource. Background transfer API knows how to turn the network tap back on, and successfully go and retrieve that information. This is something nuanced to it is you don't have to wait for an entire file. You could think of a book on tape or long songs that are fairly large. You don't have to wait for background transfer to complete before you can start playback. You can start playback virtually instantly after doing that. So this is really the key takeaway is for background audio apps, encourage you to have great customer experiences, make sure they have long battery life on their devices, and take advantage of the connected standby cases. So, just doing a time check of about 15 minutes. The sign, it just turned red on me. Got about 15 minutes left, and then we'll take some questions. In this, now that we've focused on the design aspect of tiles, of that full of the content library, full screen playback, and then some video optimization and audio optimization, I want to talk about overall apps. This is also likely covered in a number of our other sessions, but for media apps, there's a few things that we start to see fairly often. First, search is just prevalent. It's prevalent throughout all applications, but when your app is activated, it could be basic, but I wanted to mention it, is when your app is activated from the tile versus search or share one of the contracts, what I see in a number of apps is the fact that the developer is usually testing their application on their dev box, the process is running, then they go ahead and launch into a search or a share experience. Share is actually only about target, share target. But if I'm searching an application and I go ahead and bring up, say, my music app, the app is invoked at that point. It's actually invoked from a cold start. So that code path really needs to be exercised during your testing to make sure that launching that application straight into a search contract versus launching into it from activating from the tile, something that you really want to pay attention to. Similar to that, handling suspend and resume. Since video and audio is somewhat memory intensive, you want to make sure that when your app is suspended, you get that suspend event for your app, that you free up any resources that you can. It's going to do a couple of things. One of them, if you've got a lot of resources, say I've got a video stream that I'm holding on to and a lot of resources to process that stream, if I get suspended, if I go into the background, the OS is more likely to terminate my app. Actually, two things. Customer's not going to have a great experience because I'm eating up most of the RAM on the system. But second, the OS is, as a result of that, is going to be more likely to terminate my app, and I'm now going to incur those startup costs when the user switches back to me and launches that app. So really freeing up resources when you suspend, very critical, especially for media-oriented apps. The second piece is the or second half of this slide around roaming state and credential locker. They're actually a little bit tied. Handling roaming state, we've mentioned also in other sessions, you get a little bit of memory, a little storage space that we provide you so that you can roam the state across logins. So when I log into that Samsung PC and I'm playing a great Hulu experience, I'm watching my TV, and then I come over to my Surface, I run that same app, it's queued up right to the point where I left off from that service. So the system, whether you use our provided roaming settings that Windows does provide to you, or whether you use your own, make sure that you're being considerate about that multi-device use. And then second, if I am asking for credentials for a user to log into my system, we all know how painful it is to continue to log in our password, our username and password, remember what those are. So you can provide a really low friction way for people to log in your app. All it is once you ask for those credentials for the very first time, you can securely store them in our credential locker. The credential locker then roams between my personal PCs, just my settings, when I go from my one PC to another. So if I'm opening up your application, I log in for that first time, then I lock up, walk away from my machine, I turn it off, I go to my home PC. Once I run your app there, it's almost like magic. I don't have to sign in, I'm just able to get to the content quickly and securely. So that credential locker is something that I really want to pitch, especially for media-focused apps, because a lot of times we have credential-based subscriptions or systems that are being used.
Another UI tip that we want to share with you is how to making sure that the UI that you're using is an affordance that's already available and commonly available to users. And a couple of good examples of that. Right now I have the Netflix app open, and when the user swipes in from the edge, they have settings, devices, share, and search available to them. From settings, they can find all of the account management information that Todd was mentioning. This is a place where you can, your account management, whether it be a login, logout, or in this case, it could be some additional information about the user that they may want to store, can be found in this common location. Privacy policy is another thing that's very important in order to include. You'll want to make sure that every app here has a statement within it, and the user will be able to find it within settings in addition to the Windows Store app description. Additionally, we were talking quite a bit about how the user navigates and finds content within an app. Within the media apps, it's just as important as within something like, say, shopping, where for the user to be able to search for information. They may have a specific title in mind, and would be able to then just simply swipe from the edge, tap search, enter the title, and find the information that they're looking for. So just to, I'd forgotten to flip over, in order to show you, but when I was swiping from the edge previously, showing settings, and then the user can access any of the account information and permissions, privacy policy information, things like that. Likewise, swiping from the edge and then going ahead and then searching for information within the app would be also another option. Play 2 is something that you wanted to teach a little bit about.
Definitely. Play 2, in those scenarios where you want to share, say, your home movies, say that skiing video that I showed earlier with my friends and family, if I'm at home, being able to present that, that's something that's available on the device's charm when I'm at home playing that short form content.
And then there are a couple other things that we want to prompt you in order to think about also, and that's if it's appropriate for the scenario that you've defined, is it appropriate to allow the user in order to print some information? Perhaps it's something that is explicitly relevant to what your app is doing. Another that I want to share with you is, in this case it happens to be a photo, but share. Share is something that can be a rich experience. Right now we're seeing some great examples of a thumbnail image and a URL, for example, in order to direct someone to a website of the app. But you can get even more specific cases. If you're currently watching a video, for example, and you want to let someone else know the specific video information that you have, there's a chance in order to do that too. In this case here, I have the Photos app open, and the user is able to share to SkyDrive and put some information up on their personal SkyDrive. And so there are a lot of rich scenarios for you to consider, so definitely think through what it is that you're trying to support and enable your users in order to be able to do.
And earlier I mentioned the background transfer APIs, because we see a lot of sharing with a text, string, URL, maybe a small photo or a thumbnail. But my pitch for background transfer APIs is for media scenarios. Say I'm creating a home video and I want to upload it to maybe a YouTube-style site. What I can do is, if that app or that site has a share target, just like SkyDrive has, I'm able to share that full video over to that application. You may notice when you share to an app, the app can be light dismissed, disappears. With background transfer API, as long as they're using that app, is using background transfer API, the upload will continue to occur while that app even is dismissed. And even if the process is terminated, the OS on the behalf of that app will continue to upload that file. It'll actually provide events to that application on the progress and when it's completed, so that if in the midst of that upload, the user then goes into that app, they could see a progress of that video, maybe it's a very large video, getting uploaded into that application or service. So background transfer APIs are something that are definitely available for you as a share target, and encourage you to look at those in building your apps. So we're going to kind of wrap up with a couple of slides, but this one is, this slide is actually not about media playback. But it is something that we get questions a lot about. You've got content libraries potentially out there, lots of photos, music, video. What happens when your user goes to your website? And so I bring it up in the media case, but it's for all applications. What happens if they go there, and what does that look like? Well, you can add some metadata to your website that will notify the user through the IE10 experience that you've got an app in the store and drive them to that app. Second, if they already have the app, you can prompt them to switch over to that application. And then even in a third case, a little bit more elaborate, if they choose to play the video or the music or the media that's on your website, you can use a protocol handler. That protocol handler can deep link into your app experience. You can drive straight into that app. So there are a number of things that you can do with your website to really integrate and provide a great Windows 8 experience. The last piece is not media related, but it's really about the ability to add a large resolution icon to your website, so that if a user does pin your site to their start screen, rather than having the Inner Explorer E with the name of your site below it, you have a nice, rich, high resolution image that's on that square tile for their experience. So a few tips around the website that you really want to take advantage of and make use of. You know, we go through, Laura and I, in our preparation for this, we've used the kind of the real world experiences that we've had with a number of the apps that you see in the store, apps that are upcoming, all of the questions that we've gotten from developers, designers, design integrators. But One of the things I can't help but share is, wow, if you're doing a deep media playback scenario, whether it's video or audio, you've got a lot of decisions that you're making. There's infrastructure decisions. There's, you know, how do I deliver great experiences on lower bit rate connections through 3G, 4G? Connections. How do I handle rights management? Very key to a lot of these scenarios. So each one of these that I have listed here, I wanted to acknowledge that those are parts of the puzzle that you will be considering when you're delivering and creating your app. And I think a really positive thing is between our ecosystem that's in part of Windows 8 that's out there that has bits of these pieces for us that provide, say, the adaptive bitrate part with smooth streaming, Play Ready for DRM, or the whole set of these items in the player framework that I referenced earlier. There are a number of choices that you can make to advance and accelerate the creation of your Windows Store app. So for this slide, it's really that related sessions pitch that you want to, if you're viewing online or if you're here in person, we've got some really interesting upcoming ones. Later today, we've got the media extensions to build great video playback apps coming up. It's a 400-level session, and then followed by a 300-level session, which is building the advanced media apps using the player framework. Tomorrow, we're going to do a media case study and bring a number of partners up on stage, and really for you guys to hear from them rather than from me, what were their experiences like? So we will have Hulu Plus team, we'll have the Netflix team, and the Slacker Radio team up on stage to answer those questions, to talk through, and then we'll follow up with a Chalk Talk later on tomorrow. So I encourage you to come to those sessions, check those out. Got a number of resources in the slides as well for you to cover and for reference.
And then additionally, we wanted to mention that there's an app fast track area in the Rainier room for you to be able to schedule 20-minute consultation from if you have a developer, design, or test question. There'll be someone available in order to answer your questions, and it doesn't have to interfere with you attending your sessions.
Thank you, everyone. We'll open it up to, we have a number of minutes left, 5 minutes or so, for any questions that you might have. Either shout them out, I'll repeat them, or use the microphone, whichever works. Question up front.
Is there a way to query hardware information, software, or solo information, or battery life information for the Windows Store app?
So the question is there a way to query hardware information or software or battery information? System level information. So largely that's abstracted from your application. There is a sample on dev.windows.com that uses the device enumeration to see what devices and components are part of your system, but you don't have direct access for the battery, for example, in that case. And that's something that's controlled at an OS level, and that's why it's abstracted. One other question?
Yeah, you mentioned the video is uploaded to GPU when it's full screen.
Mm-hmm.
If it's an app or there's another app stack right next to your video playing app, is that still uploaded?
Great question. So the question is around the GPU optimization that I mentioned earlier with full screen video playback and whether that optimization exists if the app is snapped or in fill mode. Great question. And the answer to that is no, the optimization does get turned off when one major thing happens, when the video is not completely full screen. So that encompasses the scenarios that you just mentioned. It also does encompass the scenario if you've got elements drawn on top of the video. So I thank you for that question, because I really want to make sure that when you're playing that full screen video, don't try and overlay any other type of elements, UI elements, because you'll pop out of that GPU optimization mode. You won't get that long battery life that you'd be seeking for your customers. It doesn't mean you can't turn them on. We showed the playback controls popping up and disappearing. But for the long form content, we want you to have that full screen video without any overlays. So that's a great question. All right. No other ones. Thank you very much for your time, and encourage you to come to the other sessions.